Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a
house. Well, thanks, Dutch and Jacks. I'm Tom Holland. He's Mr. Kevin O'Neill. She's Miss Jessica Zaluska, Jay-Z. SP Futures up 6.25. Dow Futures up 53. NASDAQ Futures up 20. As we have the Fed rate decision today, everybody's expecting a quarter point increase, and we'll see how that goes. I wonder if they're going to break the string of just raising rates they pay to banks as opposed to draining money out of the system. But we will see on that. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Doing fine today.
I won my bet with myself this morning. You might ask,
What do you owe?
Well, it's kind of in-house, if you know what I mean. My bet was, before we made it out of the parking lot, young Jay-Z would snivel about it being cold out, and I won. Just saying.
Snivel, what a mean thing to say about poor Jessica.
Thanks, Kevin, I know. She's always making fun of me.
But I mean,
yeah, I'm sticking up for my pal here.
Well, yesterday I broke the two-female rule. And, of course, I come in, I turn the air on because it's always hot in here because of all the machines and everything. And I get the, hey, there's two women in here. What are you doing with the air conditioning on? So just saying that's what happened.
So this is just your way of pushing back, huh?
Just, well, you know, a little bit. Just
seizing the moment.
Seizing the moment. The thing that is kind of concerning me, Kevin, regarding the Fed and the two-facedness of it is if you look at... They're supposedly pulling money out of the system, right? And dropping the balance sheet and everything. If you look at the percent change of M2, the last 3 months has been 5.4%, which is about as high as it's been in the last few years. The 12 months is only 4, so it's going on the way up. You know, the last 13 weeks has been 5.2 versus 4.5 and 4.0 in the 52-week and 26-week previous. So I think it's all somewhat of a con game. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously the rest of the curve is pushing up a little bit, so it's not a total one. But I don't know why we had to come in with a new system. Well, just the old system, you know, is, I don't know. I mean, I just when somebody tells you what their, gee, how much money you got, this should be a fairly simple question. You know, what's in your bank book? And then say, well, but I got 4 bank books, or I got. I mean, how complicated can we make this? I mean, we have a money supply number. We're supposed to be raising interest rates. By doing that, you're supposed to drain money out of the system. You know, they're not draining money out of the system. They're just paying interest to banks. Now, what genius came up with that, and how did everybody else say yes? And I don't understand.
Well, if you are, and I know you sort of buy into it, if you are a believer in Goodhart's Law, then you know that it is all about the activities that you do, not the not the targets that you set, and certainly not the targets you say publicly. So you can only judge the Fed by the Fed's goals, by the activities it is doing, and ignore anything that they have to say.
Well, they are, in fact, by paying the banks more money, they are essentially becoming a competitor in the Fed's funds market. So they could say that the Fed funds rate is going to be 2 or 2.25 because they're paying 2 or 2.25. So you're not going to get it cheaper some other place, but it just changes the whole game. You know what I'm saying? It's just weird. I mean, I don't know who came up with that idea, but whoever they did, they're holding the room. And, you know, that's, yeah, two things. One very positive. We should have a very interesting guest, hopefully next week, Kevin. My friend from the Fed, says you need to meet us for a caucus last night. I got a couple guys from overseas. A couple of guys from overseas. My south side keeps spewing out, doesn't it? One's from Finland.
You can take the boy out of the south side, yeah. But you can't take the south side out of the boy.
Isn't that the truth? And one of the dudes is from Great Britain. Nice fellow. I mean, I was reading some of his stuff. I'm not sure exactly what he. He's one of these economists that deals with the euro versus the US versus the British pound, and he's an anti-Brexit guy. So I was listening to that a little bit, and which is he has good points actually. The other dude was very interesting. He's from Finland, and he was telling me how the Finnish have always had everybody in Finland goes in the army for a year. I don't know if you knew that or not, but everybody goes in the army for a year, and they always have these huge exercises right over the Russian border, or right on the Russian border, pretty much. The same time they do what the Russians do it on the other side. So his job was to jam all the Russian communications on the other side. He was in electronic warfare or something. He goes, so everybody spends all their time trying to jam in the other guy's communications as their tanks are running up and down, 100 miles apart.
Sounds like fun. It's sort of the military version of spy versus spy, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And he says everybody's in the army for a year, and everybody knows could come right back in any second. And anyway, but he's I guess he's somewhat of a world-renowned. I don't know what you call these guys. They're not econometrics. You're in academia. I mean, just maybe an Al Snart question. What do you call somebody who tries to put together massive models for, if all of a sudden gold ran to 1,500 or 500, what would happen? That type of thing, and all the other stuff.
Yeah, I think econometrics. That the difference over time is that we used to do things to try and. With sample data and try to project. Now that it is so easy and inexpensive to just have real data that you can run scenarios against it. That's really the big difference is that storage is cheap, database technology is advanced, and so now we aren't taking small samples and trying to project from them. We're taking today's real live data and saying, okay, now let's apply a factor to it and see what happens.
Is the data that good?
I can't speak to macroeconomic data. I don't know, but in the business world, yeah, the data is very good.
Okay, that makes sense. I sometimes wonder when people get a hold of my Carl. He's going to be on today, by the way, 7 o'clock.
Good.
And he's gonna.
I'll let him be PO'd about the Kavanaugh hearings. Then.
Oh God, it's the. I honestly don't know where I am on all this stuff, Kevin. I really don't. Can I?
One thing that's come up a couple of times on the show, and not when I've been on, or I would have pushed back right then and there, is this idea that somehow we should draw a conclusion from that handshake incident with the guy that tried to come up and shake hands with him. Put yourself in that spot during the hearings. You have people disrupting the hearings nonstop.
Yep.
The whole time and having to be taken out of there. You have security people surrounding Judge Kavanaugh, and some guy he doesn't know is coming up from one side to shake hands with him, and on the other side, he's got his security people going, "Come on, Judge, let's go. Let's go now."
Yeah,
I don't know how you draw a conclusion from that.
I don't know how you can draw a conclusion from any of this stuff, to be honest with you.
That's the kind of thing that's shaping some opinions on this. And you're right, I don't know how you draw a conclusion from any of it. The latest one is that the what's the guy's name that was Daniel's attorney, Stormy Daniel's attorney. Is there's someone claiming that that was all just he got pranked? That his big revelation is a hoax. Now, I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I don't either.
This is the kind of stuff that's flying around.
Well, there's things that are flying to me that are very obvious to a real lot of people, and I think that even. The conservative people that I know and respect, which is most of them, even you, you're the first one to pick it up. You sense it. I mean, the gentleman I had dinner with last Saturday, basically, you know, why is Trump your favorite president ever? Well, he hates Muslims. He wants to put a wall up and keep the Mexicans out. He hates liberals. I mean, okay. I mean, so it's not all that. I mean, you and I, Southside was not so much different from where you hatched from, but it's when you know people hate you, you're going to push back. I mean, if you talk to Professor Eric, who's African American, he has an amazingly different, or I won't say different, but a more extreme point of view of how much these people hate people that aren't like them. I mean, in the base, I think clearly is giving off that message in every different way of fireworks they can, and it's not surprising to me, even though it goes to actually screws up your. When I see the liberals doing some of the stupid stuff they're doing, I know it's screwing up what they're trying to project, and it's a horrible message in a lot of ways. But I also know why they're doing it. These people don't like them, and they don't want any judge in there that this guy puts in there, because they know that they hate this group. I mean, it absolutely is out there, Kevin. I mean, it's not like it's a hoax, right? I mean,
I get that, but I don't see where that applies specifically to Kavanaugh. What's he done that
I would agree with that? You. What did the guy that Obama nominated? What did he do to not get a vote? I mean, first of all, I hate doing that when you compare one to the other. But the fact is, the thing is out of control. These people can't govern in a way that makes any sort of sense. And that's the problem. And somehow or another, I want us to hit bottom without shooting people. I don't know that we're going to do that. I mean, it's getting worse by the day. The hatred on both sides.
I agree that it's getting worse. I think it's a real problem. I think we're getting so much doublespeak. How's that for drawing something back out of Orwell? Doublespeak. And I'll give you an example of that. And that is, a week ago we said we can't have Dr. Ford interviewed by 11 old white men. So they go and get a counsel. You know, they hire a special counsel, a woman attorney, to come in and do the questioning for them, and they're saying, well, if the senators aren't going to question them, I'm not sure I'm going to show.
Well, I have...
You know, okay, now what?
I have said, and I know, not that it makes any difference if I said anything, I've said on a million occasions, Kevin, that when you have the Fed chairman in there, or you have somebody else, or even my buddy Robert went in front of the Agriculture Committee and was talking about exchange clearing of agricultural commodity and those kinds of things, and how the Fed interacts and so forth. You know, he told me that the chairman and his number one staffer was amazingly up to speed. I don't know, some guy from the South, and knew pretty much exactly what he was talking about. So all the rest of the guys just wanted their face on TV. So now they want to just make.
Yeah. I'm glad that the Republican senators aren't going to question her, because I don't want to hear them.
But I've said all along that, be honest with you, you should have two or three people like me, or not like me personally, but they actually watch the Fed and do what they're doing, know what they're doing. Somebody like Hal or Carl, they should grill these guys. Not some dumb senator. All he's trying to do is, and you see the Fed people dodge. All they got to do is make it to this guy's 5 minutes, and the next person will never say, hey, why don't you finish? I'm going to ask you the same thing Kevin asked, and by the way, you didn't answer the question, so I'll take my 5 minutes if you need it. I mean, they'll never do that. Now, all of a sudden, they think it's a bad idea for some old guy, white guy, to be quizzing some lady who claims she got almost raped, and now they want to bow out? You don't invite her over there to grill her and then bow out. I mean, you don't do it for anybody else.
Except that they are bowing out because of the complaint that they would, you know, that they were the wrong people to be grilled.
No, they were.
Okay, we'll accommodate that. We don't like that either.
It wasn't exactly a complaint. Yeah. It was a feeling all the way through. I've been reading about this in some of the conservative spots, believe it or not, that it would be horrendous for the Republican Party, which clearly has gone in Washington to a bunch of old white men. I mean, there's no doubt. And, I mean, to guys where I think they're old.
I think there's some doubt. There are some great, candidates in that party now that are a younger generation.
I don't disagree. I don't, but I'm saying right now, the faces of the place are Bannon, who's the other guy? Who's the one that's still left in there? Begins with an M. Wilbur Ross, Trump, You know, I mean, these guys, I mean, come on. They look like the guys that were at Hugh Hefner's place when he was 80 years old, sitting around eating burgers, watching TV with the girls running around. I mean, it looks.
Nikki Haley doesn't count then?
I don't think she's any part of the discussion. I actually like her, but I think she's no part of the discussion.
From a foreign policy standpoint, I think she's a big part of the discussion.
Well, I hope so, but I don't know. Anyway, what I'm saying is it. Now and all of a sudden, hey, and I don't want to be grilling some young.
Betsy DeVos is not an old white man. You don't. I know people don't like her policies, but you know, definitely not an old white man.
I'm the people that I see on the financial side: Larry Kudlow, Wilbur Ross, Trump, and who's the other guy? The guy who hates China. That was his name. Not Bannon. Bannon left. He's still there, but left. Who's the guy I'm talking about? Anyway, I forgot.
I don't know who the guy who hates China is.
He's the guy. He's Mr. Tariff. Tells his name. Carl, though, when I get him in, or I'll think of it. But I guess what I'm saying is these are sort of, but now all of a sudden they don't want to. You know, I don't know, Kevin. I would say that from what I've been reading, the more I've read about the place and what was going on there, as I told my former English teacher at Marist Friday night. I feel like you guys stunted my growth at age 16. I wasn't doing drugs, I wasn't doing women, and I wasn't drinking every night in people's houses. I feel like I grew up wrong, you know? I had to wait till I was 20 to do that kind of stuff at college, if I could find a place, and if I could find women. But at least I had to find them myself at that point. When did they ever deliver women to us, Kevin? Wait a minute, you're at a frat bar, here's a bus with 30 girls from a sorority piling in here and start liquoring them up. When did we get to do that? We didn't even get to do that in college. We had to go find our own, and we weren't so good at it. Just saying, you know.
For yourself.
Well, I know you were better than me, but I'm saying, when did a bus ever land in front of a Morrissey Hall and you pile women in there and said the bus doesn't leave till tomorrow morning? I don't think that ever happened, did it?
Well, you were the RA. You were responsible.
Well, that's
for
right.
Us,
I was responsible. So, stop so right there. I was responsible.
We weren't allowed to tell you.
Yes. But I think I'd have spotted a bus. I wasn't one of those kind of guys. I wasn't Sergeant Schultz. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yes, well, that's true.
I see nothing. But, you know, I just don't, that's not the kind of group that I want my leaders coming out of. It's just me. I just, you know, but then nobody asked me for that. I don't know if anybody else want their leaders coming out of Marist High School either. So, I mean, everybody's got their view on that. Now, you went to, Loyola. Everybody likes Loyola. They're high end joint.
Mm-hmm.
You were the Jesuits. Now, do you feel you should have gone to this place? Georgetown, Prep? Same people. You didn't get that.
Jesuit school. I remember some stuff. It was the 1970s, and I remember some drugs, and I remember a lot of drinking, and far less women because it was an all boys school at the time, and so it wasn't like. Although I did know people who spent a lot of time with the Regina girls and. So, you know, it was there.
Did you go over?
You missed out, Tom.
I know. Did you go over to Robert Kennedy's house and have a huge party for a whole weekend and not have to go home?
No, but there were some darn wealthy people in my class.
Yeah, you guys. Well, you guys are probably closer to it than I was. But I mean, I'll tell you what. There were guys who went through people.
Yeah, well, because we had a lot of Wilmette, Winnetka. Kenilworth, those type of areas, as well as people from the north side.
Guys at Marist were terrified of having cigarettes in their locker. They had the ability to open everybody's locker and whatever once in a while, just go and open them all up. They didn't care if they found cigarettes. You were bleep out of luck. Let alone,
yeah.
I don't know what they'd have done if they'd opened the door one day and saw something like marijuana in there or a six pack. I think they would have had a cow right in the hallway. I can't even imagine what they would have thought.
I'm only willing to admit to so much on the air here because I may want to be a judge someday. But
God. The vetting process there, are they going to come vet? Well, you just got...
Well, that's the other one that gets me is that the, we must have an FBI report here.
Yeah, how would you even start that?
The FBI has already investigated the guy six times. So is the FBI incompetent and wasn't able to find any of this stuff the first six times? What makes us think they're going to be competent?
How would they even
I don't know. What's the alternative? The FBI is actually competent and something's going to be different this time. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
They probably went back to people at the, interviewed some people at the school and said, what was he like? He was fine, you know, blah, 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 and who they maybe didn't get. Who knows, Kevin? I just,
Everybody that I've seen interviewed about that process has said it's essentially a colonoscopy.
How far back? They're not gonna find out who my.
That's a good question. Is I don't know how far back.
Well, half the guys I hung around in high school.
Say how far back they go.
How would you even find the guys I hung around in high school? Half of them are dead.
Again, the how far back matters. I guess that's a relevant question. And then of course you know that the judge went on television the other night and said said he was a virgin for a rather. Ripe old age by today's standards, which should be a very easily disproved. And Carl wrote one of his blog entries about this. That should be an easy one to prove if it's not true. If he was lying on during that interview, that's easy. You just go talk to everybody you ever dated. You go find everybody you ever dated and say, did you have an intimate relationship or not? And if the answer ever is yes, then he lied.
Well, I tell you what, if you went and interviewed all the people I dated in high school, that'd be a short list. Just saying.
Well, but it's high school and college.
Ah, okay. Well, George Hope Prep was high school.
So, again, does that, you know, because if he is, and you can ask Carl to talk about this, but if he is, it is unlikely that the person who behaved the way he's accused of behaving would have been a virgin. You know, doesn't that make sense?
Well, he didn't succeed, so he was a virgin that night, evidently.
Well, okay, so, you know, but do people who behave like that, are they the kind who stay celibate for a long time?
No.
No, not likely. So, So go. You know, investigative journalists, do your job. Go find the contradictory.
That's the whole point that I'm trying to make here, Kevin. We'll never know.
He's, you know, they just ridicule him on.
Well, you know, I sort of an ancillary switch it to something closer to home. I was listening to a Cub game and went home last night, so I turned on its radio this morning in the car, and there's a score on there. And
I'm sorry that you were listening to the Cub game.
Yeah, I know. And I talked to I don't know, we got to talk a little bit about that. Are they going to make it? I'm not so sure. They look pretty feeble. But I turn the score on, and they got these two guys are talking. Who's on even at that hour? I guess it's – I don't even know. But they're all over the fact that Joe Madden is an idiot because Joe Madden said yesterday he hadn't read the blog post Madison Russell's ex-wife and how stupid that is in this day and age. And you know what, Kevin? There's an age thing. I don't think it's your obligation to take sides in this stuff. Everybody thinks that all the stuff in that you know nothing about, really. Nobody knows what Addison Russell did or didn't do to his wife. I mean, everybody thinks that it's their job to be a juror in today's world of public opinion. I don't. If I'm Joe Madden, I'm not so sure I read that. Am I just showing my age or what? Why should I have to dig through and form an opinion? That's what Major League Baseball is taking on the role, which I don't necessarily like. But that if that's a criminal offense, that's what that detective is supposed to be doing. It's not. I don't need to do that. He's doing it. I either trust the system or I don't, or I come up with a better system. I'm not saying I think the system is the best, but I'm not so sure that Major League Baseball system is any better. And I surely think that the court of public opinion isn't any better. So where do we go with it? Here's two guys saying that Joe Madden should almost be fired because he didn't read the thing and form an opinion. Kevin, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, and that's idiotic. Yeah. Now, from Madden's standpoint, the smart move would have been to say, I am not going to comment on this while there's an investigation in process.
I trust the process.
I don't
it's
know,
not my job.
I'm not commenting.
Yeah. I trust the process. It's not my job. Simple, right?
Yeah.
But... Well, did you read it? No, I haven't even read it because I trust the process, and I don't want to get involved. Right? I mean, we don't.
Well, and I wouldn't. And if that were the follow up question, I wouldn't even give it that much of an answer. I would have said, "I just told you I am not going to comment on this."
Well, you're better.
Don't ask me to comment on it.
But everybody thinks their opinion in this thing matters. Well, how does? I mean, as much as you and I. We'll talk about the process and how it's kind of screwed up this whole Supreme Court thing that was screwed up really from probably been screwed up since Robert Bork and is getting more screwed up by the time. And I think it's time for people to sit down and say let's be humans about this. I really do, but nobody seems to agree with me, do they? I mean, it isn't happening that I can see.
Well, it isn't happening, and you know, a lot of it again is, you know, it's stuff we've discussed. But you know, why would someone like Dianne Feinstein sit on this until
I have
the
no
last
idea.
Minute?
Maybe she thought he wasn't going to.
How does that serve Dr. Ford?
I don't get it,
especially when she originally wanted privacy. She didn't want this to be public, and the Senate actually has a process where you can bring these kinds of things for investigation without anybody's names being public during the vetting process. So what would possess Dianne Feinstein to handle it the way she did?
I have no idea. And I don't even know if the account of when she got it and she didn't is even correct. So save that thought, Kevin.
Yeah, and then
up
I watched the attorneys.
Dow futures up 49. Got to go to break.
They're not, sir.
No.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and it's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Well, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holliday, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Jay-Z, Jessica Zaluski on the board. A little bit of a, got her voice back better today, so she's doing a little bit better. S&P futures up 575, Dow futures up 45, Nasdaq futures up 19. Oil down 18 cents, not very much, 72.10, so still up on the week. 30-year yield 3.085, so back off from the 3.1, but still hanging in there. I don't know if it's going to keep flying, going to fly down, I doubt it. DAX down 27.2, FTSE up 7.1. CAC round up 18.3, so let's call that mixed of not very much over in Asia. Nikkei up 93.4%, Shanghai up 25, it's 0.9, but over 2,800, 2,806. Hang Seng up 317, 27,813. Volatile week of the Hang Seng, but up today. Again, we have West Texas down 18, Brent down 22. That spread is now $9. Wow, $9.50. Natural gas 305. This is one of the big news of the week, is natural gas being up this high. RBOB up 2.05. We had oil run up before a couple times this year, but we never saw the natural gas go with it. This is the first time, so maybe you got to keep your eye on some of these oil stocks. If they're moving together, I think the oil stocks should be doing halfway decent. Gold is down $2, 1203. Silver up another penny, 14.5. Silver's been the mover this week, silver and copper. Gold, not so much. The copper's had a big move. Silver is kind of the halfway between precious metal and industrial metal. Has had a good week. Gold, a little bit, but not so much. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:36. Chicago will be clear today with periodic clouds. Going to be a little bit chillier today with a high of only 68 and a low of 49. Phoenix is partly cloudy today with a high of 103, low 77. Chicago Bad stayed silent against the Pirates last night as the Pirates brought home a victory, ending the game 6-0. White Sox had a little more luck, bringing home a win against the Indians, ending the game 4-5. And the Diamondbacks stormed the field, celebrating a 4-3 win against the Dodgers just after they watched Escobar's ball sail over the right field wall, securing a walk-off homer. No accidents to report, and that is all. Back to you.
Kevin, what did you think of the mini brawl in the Brewers-Cardinals game? Could that, did the guy hit the home run be any bigger of an ass or what?
You know what? I haven't seen the clip. Tell me what happened.
He whacks one, and he does the bat flip, and starts immediately mouthing to the bench and all the way around the bases, everybody, position player. And finally makes it to home, and the catcher meets him halfway up the line. Not happy. And they start jawing, and I don't know if the guy ended up, the bench is empty. I don't think I ever did touch home place or home base. They ended up, they cut away from what I was watching the highlights. I imagine he eventually touched home and the run counted, but for a while it didn't. I mean, I haven't seen an exhibition like that in a while, you know, where you just immediately start jawing at, like, the first baseman, second baseman. Like, what are you doing? I didn't watch the beginning part of the game because I wasn't watching the Cardinals. I mean, I don't know if the guy had gotten drilled his last three times up or something like that, which I guess would cause you to do that, but I don't think that happened. But it was about as bad as I've seen. But I guess we got some characters in baseball, huh?
Yeah, we do. And, you know, I do understand that when someone throws a baseball at another guy and it's going 90 plus, that one might have a little problem with that, and I will tell you, all my years of playing first base, I could get pretty prickly about someone who'd step on my foot at first base.
Yep.
Because I never took more of careful. I sort of get some of that, but some of this protocol stuff, well, you did the bat flip, you did whatever. Oh, you know, so what?
Well, I mean, some of it's constantly showing up somebody. I mean, in football, some plays you win, some plays I lose, and every time you win, what am I going to do? You stand over me and point at me and, you know, pound your chest like you're, you know, something? I don't know. I mean, like something out of another world. I mean, you really need to do that? I mean, we're not talking about professional wrestling here. I mean, it's
a... Well, and I had ways to deal with that, too. I mean, well, sure. You know, one of my favorite things was, okay, you want to step on my foot? We'll hold you on the base because I'll get the pitcher to throw over.
Yeah, and I get the tag.
I'll get him to lob one over, and I will put the tag down on your foot. And I'm going to whack you really hard in the ankle with the ball.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the kind of, you know, you settle it up. Okay, you want to step on my foot? Fine.
Yep.
Bam!
Well, you know, with the Cubs this week, I was listening to the Sunday game, and who's the color commentator, the old pitcher, DeShays?
Jim DeShays.
And he was saying, you know, be careful with these Pirates because the three of the four pitchers you're going to face are guys that are their earned run average in the second half of the season is under two. I mean, the Pirates had every reason to think they were going to compete for that division. They got a real team, and like they had all these guys out the first part of the year, and they just fell behind. I mean, right now, I don't know. I'm not so sure the Pirates aren't the best team in the division. I mean, they're pretty close. I mean, I think. But it's not like you're playing.
Actually, lately it's been the Brewers, and they have really kept the heat on the Cubs. And the Cubs hit these inexplicable hitting droughts, and you know they've scored two runs the last two nights, and that was on a solo home run, or one run the last two nights. That was a solo home run by Cole Hamels, of all people.
I don't think I for one, Kevin, don't think it's inexplicable. They can't manufacture a run to save their life. They're station to station baseball, and five or six guys had their batting averages 40 points lower than it was at the All Star break. So it's not inexplicable. I mean, with the All Star break, Elmora was over
20. Why they've hit those droughts is inexplicable, and some of it's injuries. You know, I understand that, but. You know, as many good things as David Bote did, he eventually turned back into David Bote. You know, Chris, third baseman Chris
Bryant. I don't think he's healthy yet.
He hasn't been right the whole second half of the season. I am willing to bet he will have shoulder surgery in the off season.
Well, I hope not. His shoulders, given enough time to heal, they heal pretty much.
Maybe that's all he needs is to take 3 months off. But one way or another, he just hasn't been right, and that has to affect the swing. On the other hand, Rizzo's been hot, and Zobrist has been good all along. It's just getting guys to bunch their way together. And you're right, they need to get better at manufacturing runs. And you know, they've been, for a little while, they were actually pretty good at it.
Well, they haven't stolen a base in a month. They can't find it. They can't put a lead. You put Murphy at leadoff is not a way to manufacture a run. I'm sorry, unless he eats one out. I mean, it's just one.
Well, he's not going to do it as a base runner because he's not that fast. But on the other hand, he was getting on base.
Yeah.
Early on, you know, lately, not true. He's been slumped too. But he was a guy who got on base at a high percentage and historically has. That's been his MO for a long time. Maybe he'd be a better number two hitter, but the Cubs haven't had a leadoff hitter since Dexter Fowler left.
Yep. Kevin, I got it.
And after Dexter Fowler left, it turned out that the Cardinals didn't have a leadoff hitter either.
Kevin, are we change gears on you a little bit, because I know that these are questions that I'm about to ask you. It affects people's investing dramatically, but in a, not so much, you know, should I buy XYZ today or sell it today, but in terms of the long pull. I'll give you an example. I'll lead into this with a story. I can't believe I'm becoming like Jimmy Stewart and Dusty Rides Again. But my first stock I ever bought was John Mansville. I was still working at Pullman, and I was covered writing it. So I started selling at 35s. Of course, then there were no dollar strikes. So the thing goes to like 29, so I started selling at 30s. Then it went to like 24, I started selling at 29. So finally I puked the thing out at like 22. Well, stock ended up going bankrupt. It was very early on. The first... I'm going to say nibbles of the asbestos issue, okay, where they went down, and who's the guy who gave all the money to Notre Dame? how's the name? What are two towers? Grace. Grace Company got involved in that. Root, Kellogg Brown and Root, the Root, they got involved in that. So it was the first thing, and then years later, you know, trading on the floor for a long time, I read this article about how the people in Giants Mansville should have known, like, on such and such a date, it was like the exact same date I bought the damn thing. And, like, what idiots we all were. So here it is, like, 15 years later, and not only could just lick my wounds on my first trade, I had to read this article about what a moron I was, right? And it struck me, you know, I'll just have to set us up before break, but it struck me that yesterday's speech, and I'm not going to get into the political, you know, whatever, whether I agree or disagree, and the fact that our president got laughed at, but that's another story. But I'm saying there clearly is, Kevin, a change in tone that I don't think most people who voted for him or against him, I think three-quarters of people, and I don't usually criticize the population, have no idea of how serious this change of tone is. But if you listen to that speech yesterday, it is clearly a change of tone in terms of what the U.S.'s role in the world is, and how companies should deal with other countries, maybe even companies in those countries that are from another place, which is where I'm trying to go here, it clearly is not a world of cooperation. It's, if you can possibly get a tariff deal, it's better than the other guy, you should take it. And it's not a question of we're all in this together. It's a question of advantage over another. And again, people vote that way. People think we've been screwed. They've been talking into thinking we have been screwed. Maybe we have. Maybe we haven't. I don't know. But I'm saying to not think that there's a change going on here, whether you think the man's a buffoon or not, there is. Whether we voted for it or not, I don't know. The fact is, it's happening. Now, I see some...
I think those that voted for him actually did vote for that.
Okay, fine. I mean, most of them don't... I think most people voted for him don't know what a tariff is, Kevin, but that's another story. But...
Yeah, probably not, but nevertheless.
Let's hold this thought. SP futures up 6.
Okay.
Dow futures up 44. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-8000. 1-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Arnold. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures up 6. Looks like a pretty solid rally here this morning. So Kevin, wanted to pick up on what we were saying before the break is, you know, I looked at the, my John Manville thing and this thing with, everybody's convinced, me included, by the way, is that somehow or another, before the election, we're gonna figure out a way to declare victory on China and blah, blah, blah. At least that's what everybody's been thinking. But it's getting closer and closer. And yesterday's speech didn't exactly drive it closer and closer to that as well. But, you know, first people were talking and they weren't talking. But I wonder, Kevin, everybody's convinced that Apple will not be any collateral damage in this. And yet, the poster child of a high margin, most valuable company in the world, doing all their crap in China and bringing stuff over here and making 65% margin, They're the beacon in the middle of the lighthouse, Kevin. I mean, is it going to be 15 years where, you know, we have some people that have a lot of Apple here that, you know, somebody that I don't think it's necessarily my job to send out a letter with big red warning on the top. What are you doing? I mean, you've ridden this stock from God knows where to God knows where. You've gotten, you know, wealthy on it. It's time. I mean, because if this goes any further, these guys, somehow or another, they're not going to come out of this hole. I mean, is it a John Mansville moment? I'm hoping no, Kevin. I'm thinking no, but I'm starting to get this itchy feeling that how do you think that the company that's in the middle of the mess that neither country is going to touch if this gets anywhere? I don't see how you draw that conclusion, or am I just being too careful because that's what I am for my clients?
Okay, yeah. Can you be just a little more specific about how what you're really saying about Apple?
I'm saying that the manufacturing base is clearly in China. That if they brought stuff back here, the margin on these phones would not be 65%. Maybe it'd be 40%. I don't know. But if it's 40, that stock is not worth 221, right? It's worth 221 because they're getting 65% margin because they're making them in China for next to nothing or selling them here for a grand a pop. Well, if all of a sudden the Chinese connection is outed with these guys, there's going to be a problem of some kind. Maybe it's just higher prices or something. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they are the poster child of the multinational who's headquartered in China, that Trump seemingly is bound and determined to screw with. And I'm not saying for the wrong reasons. I'm just saying how does Apple come out smelling like a rose if this ends up getting worse instead of better? Is my question.
Well, I don't know how they do. You know, it's funny because I like using. There are several types of examples for business cases that I use in class.
Kevin, I'm not saying I would never say they're going out of business.
Everybody can relate to it. The idea being, and cell phones is one of them. And the Apple users are, you know, they love their devices and they are going to use them, you know, even if they are twice as expensive.
I'm going to say
there are a lot of Samsung users, as an example, and certainly Android device users, who say this is great. I'm fine with it, and there is no way I'm paying that. So, all you need to do is let some competitors start to show value, and you're going to cut into Apple's margins anyway. And aside from that, because Apple's going to have to change its pricing strategy. Right now they have products that they, you know, where they can charge a premium price because there is a perceived value there. But when the perceived value goes away, they're kind of screwed. So there's a long-term thing there. It's going to be just like every other, commodity device is, you know, once it turns into that, there is going to be no perceived value. And I don't think we're many years away from
Well,
well, Apple's got to keep innovating. Well, I mean, they'll keep doing things like Apple Watches and see if those take off. Apple Watches is great. Just about the time we convinced everybody you don't need a watch anymore because you're carrying around a cell phone that'll tell you the time. Now we need a watch.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that they are not going to survive or anything like that. I'm not even close to that. I'm just saying now.
But you're talking about the investment value.
Yeah, the investment value is we're buying into this place. Their innovation seems to be in it's still cell phones is, you know, a high percentage of the company. And they're made in China and they're made for a small price relatively. You know, it's not like, you know, those other guys aren't made overseas as well. But even if you cause, through a tariff, through something, if you cause Apple to move half of their, their production to Vietnam, say, or Korea, where the prices, now the people in Vietnam and Korea know they're coming there, you know, even though they love to have them, they also know they don't have to do it for 20 cents an hour. They could probably charge a buck, and Apple's got nowhere else to go. They're not coming back here. So, I mean, so I'm just saying, if they don't have this premium, and you're right, some people are going to say, you know, if you're on CNBC, and I think they must give those guys the Apple phones, but I'm not positive on it. So, because all they do is talk about them. Now, those guys, are they going to pay $2,000 versus one? Yeah, I mean, I don't see Dr. J changing his phone anytime soon. But, I mean, is Jan going to make sure that the whole family has Apple phones at $2,000 a pop? I don't know. Does the daughter in high school really need a $2,000? I mean, Jan may still do that. I mean, he could very well do that. But I mean, he can afford it, probably. I don't ask him how much money he's got. I never ask that. I never ask my friends that. But the point being, there's going to be somebody that says, I'm not spending $8,000 for cell phones for the four of us. It ain't happening. I mean, because these other guys are just as good.
Yeah, and I'm not upgrading every 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, but my point is it's a big, the question as an investor that I have, the reason why, and this was a bad decision on my part, Kevin, I'll be honest with you. I've made some very good decisions for my clients, and I've made some bad ones. One of the bad ones I made, although I'd probably do it again, was I never got my people in any of the tobacco stocks, you know, 25 years ago. Not because I didn't think they were going to do well and because they were selling a tainted good, but they made a lot of money on it. There's no doubt about that. But I could never stare and look at my investors in the face and say, out of all the stocks on the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, even the best ones there, I had to pick one for you that is involved in 400 court cases and hope that they were going to win every single one. You know? Yet they did. Except for that major class one, which was a negotiated settlement. And they basically said, you know, how many smacks in the paddle before it hurts you? Two, okay, we'll give you two, you know, type of thing. And
Well, in those cases, they lost a lot of cases to states too. But their problem was that the problem is that it tells you how profitable they were because they could withstand it.
But they never lost one. I don't want this. I'm maybe speaking out of school. For many, many years, they never lost one to a person because the proper candidate always died, and they dragged the thing out. I mean, they're the most disgusting companies we've ever had in this country. The most disgusting. But I'm saying, but that's the reason why I didn't do it. Now, the question is, I mean, should somebody who has 80% of their money in Apple sit there and go, well, these tea leaves don't look so hot. I should maybe get out of half of it, or I should buy some puts. I mean, there's obviously something going on here, Kevin. It's not, you listened to the speech yesterday, this is not let's cut a little bit better deal and go on with ourselves. We're talking about a serious change in our policy toward the world. And if you're a company that is a multinational company based here, I think that for you to think that in 5 years from now the world is going to look the same as it does now, I don't know that that's the right assessment. I don't know what it's going to look like. If I did, I'd be wealthy beyond God. But I think that there's that speech yesterday tells everybody else in the world that we are not the same country we used to be, at least while this guy's there. They're hearing it. For us not to hear it and think about it and maybe make an adjustment, portfolio or otherwise, I think is very naive. I mean, I don't know what to do. I don't know what trade to make, but I'm just saying something here is changing, is all I'm saying.
There's a political sea change here, and yes, it should affect investment decisions if it doesn't already.
But maybe, Kevin, and I don't know.
Hasn't already.
Maybe the smart man, if I had, you know, 1,000 more clients and they all had, various stocks and so forth, because most of my people are like an index program or something. But say I had guys with a billion different stocks. Maybe the smart move today, I mean, I'm just drawing this one out of the air, is to take all your money out of these multinationals and invest them in companies that are totally domiciled and do most of their stuff here. I mean, I wouldn't do that today. I wouldn't send that letter out. But I'm wondering if maybe you shouldn't be leaning that way. I don't know. I mean, it's a thought.
It's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, what's your early line on the Stanford game? We got like 30 seconds.
Oh, my Lord. Kelly's like 2-5 or something like that against Stanford. So yep. I would not get too bullish on the Irish. It's a game that they ought to be able to win at home. But I wouldn't get real confident about it. You know, the better over-under is whether I'm going to stay awake for the whole thing. Because it's a night game.
When is the Pittsburgh game? When are we all getting together? 2 weeks or three, or what is it?
It's a couple of weeks. All right. It's a couple of weeks out.
All right, Kevin, talk to you. We're on Friday. SP Futures up 4.25. Dow Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be right back, Mr. Carl Dellinger.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTIsecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTIsecurities.com. That's john@PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Well, I'm up next, Action Jacks. I'm Tom Osh. She's Jay-Z on the board, sounding much better today. Your voice is 80%, 85, Jay-Z. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Doing SP Futures up 4.25. Dow Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 12. Hey, Carl, how are you, buddy? Thank you for...
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I was just, I don't know if you were listening before the break. Two things. I ran into a guy last night, and your name came up. I hope your ears weren't burning. I ran into a dude from Finland, who evidently, he was over visiting the Federal Reserve guys here, and he has a economic modeling thing that evidently they absolutely love, to where it's one of these where if you know, if gold does this up or down, it should cause this, this, and this to move, and evidently it's you know, I mean, I don't know if it's gospel, but it's allegedly, the guys at the Fed think it's really well done. It's one of the best ones. And I was saying, boy, I know this dude, Carl Tenninger, would love to look at something like that. He loves that kind of stuff. And, cause he knows everything about labor. And he's a guy who finds, you know, numbers where other people just gloss right over. But, anyway, before the break, I was talking to, Kevin about the president's speech yesterday. And it wasn't just that particular speech, but, clearly there's a massive tone change among his group. You know, and I'm not going to make any political assessment, but I think it's somewhat reactionary. It reminds me I guess I am going to make a political assessment. Somewhat the guys before World War I and World War II, it's a very isolationist, U.S. first sort of approach, and we've been screwed by everybody forever, you know, type of thing. And, you know, I'm sure there's some truth to it. How much, I don't know, because it's not really my bailiwick, but I mean, it signals a tone change going forward. And my question to Kevin was, and I'll ask the same one to you, does that mean I should call up all my clients that have Apple and say, God, aren't you hearing the tea leaves? Get the hell out of this and let's get in some U.S. stocks for a while and we'll go back into Apple next year or something? I mean, how do these multinationals appear to be unfazed by what I consider to be somewhat of a tone change? Does everybody think the tone change is just fake and that a week from now, to save the elections, he's going to declare victory in China and no more tariffs and the stock market runs up 10% the week before the election, or it seems to me they're serious, Carl. I thought that was going to happen a week ago. Now I'm not so sure it is. We're getting pretty close. So I don't know. I'm asking you. I'm not.
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And you know, this is the problem with what we've got going on right now, which is that the multinationals really have screwed everybody in the United States over the space of 30 plus years. You know, going all the way back to NAFTA and China being put into the WTO. And this is not a new issue by any stretch of the imagination. When I wrote Leverage, one of the points I made was that the only way to level the playing field that actually had some justification in reality was to have wage and environmental parity tariffs, because if you've got what amounts to slave labor available in a specific place, and you can do that with impunity within whatever the local legal system is there, then there's absolutely no reason for any corporation that has multinational reach not to do that. In fact, they'd be crazy not to do it, because their duty, the duty of the board and the executives, is to the shareholders, and the way you create value is to a large degree by decreasing cost. One of the things that I learned awfully fast as an entrepreneur is that you didn't make money selling things. You made money when you bought things, when you bought the things that went into what you sold. And so the entire premise behind the idea that, well, you know, we're going to make a better product, we can charge more money for it, da da da. Yes, that is, you know, that is the competitive advantage that one product or company has over another. But where you make all your money is when you buy stuff. When I ran MCS, we had a deal that we found on office space downtown that was just extraordinary. And that was a multi-year, so we had a five-year lease. That was a five-year advantage that we had over everybody else in the market. And nobody, I mean, unless somebody could have come up with a better deal, there was no way for them to get a cost structure on their office space that was lower than ours. So, you know, if you can find a way to do that, then of course you're going to do it. And when you're arbitraging different, you know, different countries, this is a huge problem, and it needs to stop. But anybody that thinks that you've got, you know, you got companies like Amazon that essentially their entire business model has shifted to this. Now, what is it? Two-thirds of their products are not actually shipped and sold by them. They're by third-party sellers.
Right.
A huge percentage of those are out of China.
Kyle, I'm thinking they were always like that. I'm not so sure. You know more about Amazon than I do, but Kevin, the gentleman was just saying, he's now more of a professor than he was an IT guy, but he was an IT guy, head of IT at Better World Books. And for years, I mean, I'm going to say go back 15 years, if you went on Amazon and you bought a used textbook or anything, that you flip right to Better World Books. They were always like that. They never took inventory on that stuff. I'm going to say they inventory more now than they ever did.
Well, in volume, of course, but as a percentage, no. Their third party seller stuff, their marketplace, is a relatively new thing, and it's where the growth has been from a standpoint margin. And if you think about it, I mean, what's the margin on a product you never have to stock,
right?
Well,
that's
astronomical. But the arbitrage of labor and environmental restrictions is not a new issue. Okay, it is, look throughout history, all the trade disputes that have happened throughout history, East India Trading Company, you want to go back far enough.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, this is not a new problem, but the idea that you can just allow a nation's productivity and its people to be eviscerated by this sort of structure, and not do anything about it at a governmental level is nuts, because the general corporate mantra, of course, the business of business is business. It's to make a profit. That's the reason you go into business. So if the regulatory environment permits it, of course it's going
to
happen.
Well, they either permit it or you find a way to get around it, which nobody ever put in a rule, which would certainly happen in taxes, right? I mean, there was never anything. People say they're just following the law. No, there was never anything in the law that says, by the way, have 5,000 Starbucks in London. I know I'm exaggerating, and none in Amsterdam, and have all your profit in Amsterdam. I'm sure that was nowhere in the tax code. I mean, nobody would write that in there. That's fine. run the coffee through an import export place in Amsterdam and charge just enough to where you never make any money in London, and you make all your money in Amsterdam. I'm going to say that's probably not in the tax code. Just saying.
It's not in the tax code, and the problem is that sort of gaming, from an accounting perspective, you've got a lot of people that are just unwilling to enforce what's written there in the law, because if you and I tried something like that, we'd be called tax evaders, not avoiders,
right?
And we'd be in jail,
right?
So, I mean, there is very little doubt that a huge part of the problem is that in the United States, in particular, we no longer have the rule of law. Where do people get the idea that you can take information and aggregate it and use it to abuse people on a discriminatory basis? By the way, when it comes to physical goods, Robinson Patman says that's illegal.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Right? And that's been illegal for 100 years. So why is it still going on? And the reason is we have nobody within state or federal governments, I don't care which level you look at, that is willing to take these laws and say, you violate these things, you're going to jail.
Kyle, you wanted me down that road. Not sure I wanted to go there, but now that we're there, let's stay here. When you look at, I mean, every governmental setup, no matter what it is, has its flaws. Now, clearly, we have a president who would really like to be a dictator. I mean, there's no question. Even yesterday, he took a shot at Canada, he took a shot at Germany, and he said nice things about dictators. I mean, a dude wants to be one. Okay, it's fine. And I understand that you might be one of the few other people that are listening know that even in the Roman Empire, when you had two consuls, right, or two guys that ran the place, that in times of a nasty war, they went out and got a dictator for 6 months, won the war, and then they sent the guy back to his farm. And guess what? He went up and left and went back to his farm, which of course nobody would ever do today. So there's no question that there's efficiencies in some of these things, and we have, this kind of stuff. But I always thought that the Constitution, in my mind, was probably the most incredible document other than the Declaration of Independence I've ever read. Yet, there's two things I think that it's amazingly flawed. One is, the corporations, which are a great invention, by the way, never die. An individual of the Carl Denninger, Tam Howe, Kevin O'Neill conglomerate could never go to Washington and somehow crookedly buy 435 people in the representative area or the Congress, another 100 in the Senate, and oh, by the way, start paying off judges and presidents. We could never do that, Carl, because guess what? After 20 years, we're dead, you know, but we're trying to get out there. If corporations, they clearly are above the law. I mean, and act like it and are, because they have an ability to contribute to every single one of these guys. And everyone who's everybody, even on the IRS, they have the ability to say, I'll offer you a job when we're done with this. I mean, it's something I believe the Constitution will never dealt with. And I also think that the idea of money in an election coming from outside the district, I don't think anybody, much as I actually liked him as a person, as a judge, I wondered, Scalia would say, I know it was in the minds of those guys back there. Right, I'm going to be Scalia for a second. I'm going to say that nobody sitting at their constitutional convention ever anticipated that people from South Carolina were enough money trying to influence an election in Illinois. I'm because how the hell would you even get there? It's a 6-day ride on horseback, you know, with your sack of cash. So, I mean, there's things that are sort of wrong here. And, you know, everything that you see today, in my opinion, you could read The Sovereign State of ITT and get in the mind of Harold Janine. Everything you've seen happen, and all you got to do is read that book 30 years ago, and it's all just played out. These guys use the governments as just a pawn, and they've been doing it kind of forever. And I don't see an end to it, Kyle. Do you? I mean, I don't see what.
Well, I don't like where the potential end point is.
No,
because the problem with this sort of game playing is that when you destroy the rule of law and you destroy due process, and you essentially say that you and I must follow this voluminous legal code, okay, that's, you know, feet wide, right? And you can't possibly have read it all and understand all of it. But if I'm a multinational corporation, if I run a company that makes a very popular handset in the mobile phone space, that I can use child slave labor in Indonesia to make the screws that hold the frame of the thing together. And if you or I did that, we'd go to jail. But these guys can do that all they want, and it makes that phone cheaper to produce, and as a result, they have a 45% pre-tax operating margin on those devices, a stock price over $200 a share, and a $1 trillion market cap. All right? And that is all a consequence of these decisions. And it's all fine. Eventually, the people who would otherwise have jobs here in the United States and who need those jobs to buy those devices run out of margin and line on their credit card.
Well, right.
And when they do, what options are left for those people that are peaceful? And see, this is where the issue comes from ultimately, where it degenerates into. And nations historically have all ended up going down the toilet the same way.
Sure.
When you have this kind of thing that goes on for long enough, somebody says, I cannot find redress in the law, therefore I'm going to use the law of the jungle because it's all I have left.
Well, and I think that was a very serious, and I'm going to say, when I talk about the Trump base, I think those people, and I consider myself one of them, actually, even though I didn't vote for them, have been absolutely and consistently wronged for probably 25, 30 years. And they know it.
Yeah.
And that's why
he's president.
Yeah.
That's why Trump's president right now. I mean, that's why it happened. And now what you have is the people who were on the other side of that are saying, oh, by the way, not only are you wrong on the facts, which they're not, but in addition to that, you're not entitled to vote and get the result of your vote anymore.
Carl, I know I criticize, I don't like the fact that our president gets laughed at. I criticize the man not for getting there, not for seeing in other people what other people refuse to see, because it was right there to be seen, and it was an amazing skill set to see it and get in there. My problem with him is I don't see six Carl Denningers sitting around him and doing what he went there that I wanted him to do. Now he's making a buffoon out of
himself.
Yeah, he's making a buffoon out of
himself. Look, at the bottom line is this. Is when you get to the bottom of what he's done thus far, okay,
what do I see? I see a man who, now that he's gotten a position, wants to use the same mechanism of power that was used by Obama and the Democrats to screw people,
right,
for his own personal purposes to screw people.
Right.
He just wants to screw a different set of people.
Right.
Oh boy, is that a bad combination.
But Carl, how do we stop? And this is a serious, I'm trying to be all serious questions, but you and I feel this way, even though I think a lot of things we maybe don't agree on, but you and I feel this way, but there's a sense, and I hate like hell to do this, but I don't know if anybody else has read the Winds of War, and when Pug Henry was over in Berlin during the 30s, as Hitler was doing his thing, and all of a sudden the submarine plants were back open and all that kind of stuff, the gradualism of how they went about decreasing people's rights, and so all of a sudden people couldn't own property, and we know who I'm talking about, and they couldn't do this and they couldn't be dying. It didn't happen one day. It was a very gradualistic sort of approach to where people almost agreed with it as it happened. It wasn't that big of a deal. But I listen to people on the TV, and I have friends I talk to, and some of the things that come out of their mouth now, Carl, and it's not like I'm immune, I'm not. But I listened to a guy yesterday talking about the Comcast buying Sky. And he was an older dude. He's older than you and me. And he goes, well, it's pretty obvious that at the end of the day, we're only going to have like three or four places worldwide that provide news and information to people. And I'm going, whoa.
Yep.
You can't be serious. I mean, and to your big versus strong thing, one of the guys who used to be a contributor on the show, and maybe we'll be again someday, real bright guy. We're sitting there one night, and the Cubs are getting this huge advantage. I don't know what the hell they gave them. They gave them a street, or they did something. And I go, well, no, that's kind of BS. And I go, he says, what do you mean? They look at the amount of people that they drag in for Cup games. And I said, well, first of all, there's no hard or fast evidence that all they're doing is just bringing people to a saloon in one neighborhood where they'd be in a saloon in another neighborhood. There's no additive thing to it. I would say that maybe Wrigley Field and Fenway, there's a little bit added to it because it's a destination, because it's old. Okay, so you could probably make the case that the Cubs have a little more people coming in than going out. Okay, so you can maybe make that case, maybe. But generally, given sports teams money, and I said, but there needs to be something justified. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, at the time, back when people really want to learn about options, we caused, they were not our seminars, Carl, we caused, when I say we, PTI, because of our relationship with the exchanges, and we were able to get a good deal on the seminar rooms. We were never part of the seminar people. We were able to get them a spot where they would bring the option students in, for lack of a better term. And all we would do is provide, a mock trading on the CBOE floor, which people loved, and we'd take people out to dinner. And we never went down a road that whatever these guys were teaching was good stuff. That was all their business. And actually it was pretty good stuff, but still we didn't put our name on it. So I said, well, if there's a return to bringing people to this state from out somewhere else, I'm going to say, Kyle, we were good for, I'm going to say every month we were good for 250 hotel nights and maybe 1,000 dinners in town, or lunches or hot dogs or whatever you want to call it. And I said, well, if that's the case, I mean, the Board of Trade Visitors Gallery at the time was the second largest visited thing in Chicago other than Buckingham Fountain. And this guy's name was Tammy. I said, Tammy, why shouldn't the Board of Trade be able to go to the state and say, God, we can document 200,000 people that came here just to see the Board of Trade. We want, and we figured a total is, $40 million we brought to the city. We want 2% of that or 1% of that, because look what we're doing. Well, why should PTI ever get any money? You guys are too small. I said, but the Cubs, because you like them, they should get a free block, a free street, a free everything. Well, yeah, because they're the Cubs. They're big. Nobody cares about you little guys. And this guy's a friend of mine. But I mean, it's embroiled in people's mentality. Yeah, Apple should be able to put their taxes overseas as the IRS guys running up your behind with a scope. They've managed to change people's mentality, Carl. I mean, you and I are like our voices in the wilderness right now, I think.
Well, we're voices in the wilderness to an extent. I mean, you look at what's going on in major parts of the country, though. It's easy to do that if you live in a big city and you see what appears to be success. And certainly if you look at the stock market, you'd say, hey, look,
all-time highs, you know, again today. Sounds great. Right up until you have one bad incident, and all those people who have been screwed for all these years decide, okay, that's enough, I'm done. And no one knows where that line is. I don't know where it is. You don't know where it is. There's, you know, historians always go back and they look at things like, you know, when you know, the Archduke got shot, right? The start of World War One, and they say, well, you know, but that was foreseeable because of blah, 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 and blah. Well, that's nice, except it doesn't do you any good in retrospect.
No.
Because the war already happened, right? The problem is you will never find in advance what led to those events and stop them, other than to say we cannot go down these kinds of roads, and we have to put up the barriers, and we have to, as people, be adult enough to recognize that if we do not cut this out, that this is where, historically speaking, it always ends. And, you know, it's not a doomsaying kind of position. I can, you know, how many nations do we need to point at? Look at what just happened in Venezuela over the last few years, for crying out loud. Do you think that didn't come from corruption and the, you know, my way or the highway decisions by people within the political structure that you do what I want or you're going to get shot?
Carl, if you were to, if you were going in,
we can't do that way. We're going to put you under a freeway overpass.
Carl, if you went on CNBC and brought up some of these issues, just like if there was a CNBC in 1929, I don't know if you ever read Freedom from Fear, where they talked about there was a depression in the agricultural areas for a decade. Really a depression.
Right.
There were all kinds of things going on that would lead somebody to believe. But if you'd have gone on September 29th in New York, and here's Carl Denninger, your grandfather, and said, well, you know, all this stuff's happening, just like today, they would say, Carl, what makes you so smart? The market's at all-time high. What do you mean something's wrong with Apple? The stock just made a record high. What's the matter with you? I mean, it is this idea that the market is all-seeing. I used to think when I was younger, I don't see it anymore. But right now, it's pretty hard to debate. If you think that the market is your God, then right now, God's pretty happy with what's going on. But like you say, that's why markets always fall from the top. Right, they,
right.
You know, that's part of the draw. But in World War One, one of the interesting books I read, I'm not as up on World War One as I am on World War Two, but there's a book called the Fall of the Dynasties. You ever see that?
No.
It basically took every, I mean, you know these names better than me. Who are the guys in Britain or Germany? Was the Hohenzollerns? Is that those guys? And then these big long names. They were the dynasty. Was he a king or what do they call the Prussian the guy who was the head of Germany? I think he was a king. But then you had the Romanovs in Russia. You had the guys that were in Turkey. That were still the remains of the Ottoman Empire. Then you had the Habsburgs. They basically took every single one of these countries, and they went from like what you see in the Middle East now, in the midst of our screwing around. I say screwing around, not able to come to what happened was. Even Saudi Arabia, what's his name took over, Prince Saud or whatever, the original King Saud, you're talking about maybe a million people, but basically, and then this is not a slur, Bedouin tribes. People run around on camels, and the dude, which is, no, that's not a slur, that's just where there's a million people, or 2 million, whatever the number was, this guy takes control of the place, all of a sudden his oil pops up. And now, what's in Saudi Arabia? 20 million people? 15? I don't know. You probably know that off the top of your head. And now you got 15, 20 million people with one family making all the money. There's population. Well, anyway, this guy did this in World War One. Population in as we started to get a little bit better medical stuff, the population in Austria, the population in Germany are all of a sudden starting to go up. There was a massive arms race. There's huge, really coming from a lot of it from the U.S. Civil War, huge advancements in munitions. There's an arms race both in quality and quantity. All this kind of stuff's happening. I was seeing something last night or watching on YouTube about somebody from Russia came over and ordered 25,000 repeating revolvers from Smith & Wesson. This kind of stuff was happening. Meanwhile, the governments were so corrupt they couldn't do anything. And one day, this prince gets shot. It was the most botched assassination where they missed him the first time and he came back down the same street. And all of a sudden, this all starts. Now, this book says you could have predicted it 5 years before, but predicting the day is what you're talking about. That's pretty hard to do. I mean,
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I can look at the pattern here that we have in America today And I can say this is going the same sort of path that we had before World War One, and again before World War Two, and it's going down the same road that Argentina went down. Okay, remember, Argentina was a thriving democratic society right up until they spent themselves into ruin by spending money they didn't have and running deficits. Okay, Venezuela did essentially the same thing, but they added hard left socialism into the mix and demanded that people adhere to it. And look at what they've got now. This is a repeating pattern throughout history. It's not a desire. It's not a wish. It's an observation.
Yeah.
Heck, you can look at the Roman Empire and the Greeks. The Greek civilization before them, same story, right?
Start paying people and to fight wars, increase the money supply, don't have enough silver. All of a sudden, your money's worth nothing, and there you go.
Right. And the thing is that at what point does it break? Well, the exact point when it breaks is impossible to determine.
Carl, hang on to that tape for a break, buddy. S&P Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 12, Dow up 25. We're down a little bit from open. We're still positive across the board. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone North Bates, thanks, Jack. Time out, Mr. Carl Denninger, Jay-Z, Jesse Lucy on the board. S&P futures up 4, Dow futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 12. Oil down 51 cents. First drop in oil we've seen in a while, 71.77. 10-year yield, 3.09, so it's down from the 3.1, but not much. This is all the adjustment we're going to get. It's not much of an adjustment. DAX now down 33.2%, FTSE down 10.1%, CAC round up 13.2, so not much happening over in Europe. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 93.4%, Shanghai up 25, over 2,800, 2,806. So the Shanghai and the Hang Seng have bounced back a little bit here. Hang Seng up 317, that's 1.1%, 27,816. So a little bit of a bounce. I'm not sure what they're seeing in the world stuff that they've bounced. Maybe they just got too low. It's very possible. Oil down 51 cents, Brent down 59. Spread is now $9.50. Natural gas, 3.06, we've been talking about this all week, is this was 271 not that long ago. So, I mean, this is a big move in natural gas. Arbob, 2.05, and we've got gold not doing much. Gold's down 370, 1201, silver down 3 cents. Copper is the one that's dragged silver up. Copper, 282. David made a huge call down at 261. Although I confess that I don't have my people in a copper ETF. That would be a nice time to buy them if there is one. I'll have one tomorrow. I think there is one, but I've never traded it. I'll bring that knowledge tomorrow. Anyway, Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:35. Pretty clear here in Chicago. Some clouds a little bit later today. A bit cooler. A bit cooler today with a high of 68 and a low of 49. Phoenix is partly cloudy today with a high of 103 and a low of 77. Quiet game for the Cubbies last night. They lost to the Pirates, who earned a victory with a score of 6-0. White Sox beat the Indians 4-5. And the Diamondbacks celebrated a 4-3 win against the Dodgers. No accidents to report. Back to you.
Little cooler today. Is this the same young producer lady that in the parking lot this morning said it's freezing?
Well, that was like 3 hours ago. It's always colder in the morning.
It was like an hour and a half ago, by the way. So, the sun wasn't out, so you're right. We'll roll with that. So, Carl, there's a lot, you know, it's hard to trade, you know, long-term stuff. I mean, you see things sort of happen and you're guarded against it. The best you can do, I think, is for somebody who has a lot of Apple stock, is you might want to be protected somehow, at least for something crazy happening, because, it seems like our government is straining a little bit. I mean, at all walks of life. I mean, nobody cares about, and again, I don't want to, you know, get into who's right, who's wrong, whatever. Nobody cares about whether somebody is guilty or not. We clearly don't trust the criminal justice system to deal with any of this sex charge stuff. It's the court of public opinion, which I find pretty horrible. We don't seem to care. Nobody seems to think that there's going to be any antitrust stuff ever from the people who even know what that is. We're not going to get that out of this government anymore. I mean, it's a problem. In Illinois, I mean, everybody knows that unless you do something about this pension stuff, we have 15 people or 20 people running for mayor, and nobody will talk about the issue. For God's sake, Carl, it's the only issue. I mean, I don't see stuff changing much here, do you? And yet it sort of has to.
That to me, I think, is one of the big things is, you know, for the last decade now, going back to, you know, all the way when Obama was first elected, and frankly going all the way back into the 1990s, I said that if we do not address the issue of health care and the monopolist practices within that part of our economy, that it ultimately is going to destroy the government, it's going to destroy our civil society. And it's not a desire, it's just a mathematical fact. I could see, I mean, the pattern was there from an exponential growth standpoint, back in the 1990s. It was something that I started talking about back then because I was running a company and it was biting me in the butt. So this is now, you know, we've gone how far down the road since then? You know, how many different presidents?
We had
a Clinton. And yet nobody will go anywhere near this. Not at the state level, not at the federal level, not at the local level. You've got a race going on up there in Illinois right now. Of course, we've got the midterms coming up. I have not heard a single word about this from any of the candidates.
No.
And there wasn't in the last election either. And so, you know, in the last presidential election. Why? Because, you know, hey, the market's up, so it's all good. Everything's fine.
Trump was going to...
Excuse me. That pension issue in Illinois is real.
Trump was going to get rid of Obamacare. But
you know what? The Republicans were willing to vote, 27 times or something like that to appeal Obamacare in both the House and Senate as long as Obama was president. They knew he'd veto it.
Right.
As soon as Trump becomes president, who will sign it, not one vote.
Right. All right, I have one for you. By the way,
tell me that they really wanted to repeal it.
You know what they did about the health care situation? And I'm going to be sneaky ass here. You know what they've done, and I know you know this, but I'm going to stick it to you anyway. You know what they did? They took the 20% of the economy, or 19.5 or something to be accurate, of the economy is healthcare, and they rattled it down to 5% of the inflation number they used, and that was their solution.
Well, it's less than 5%. You don't want to know what the weighting is in the CPI.
Actually, the CPI, it's 6.2, and the PCE, which actually has it at 20%, the adjusted PCE has it down to 5.3.
Right, which is not.
What, I'm going to ask you, when in your lifetime, I mean, I know most of the time you had insurance, and I'm sure when you were young you never needed it, which, you know, I didn't. Well, I never was without it. But when was the first time it just dawned on you that the medical system was screwed up? And I'll tell you mine. Go ahead. When you got a company and I start paying for it?
Yeah, when I really became aware of exactly how bad it was when I, you know, when MCS got large enough that we decided that this was something that we ought to be offering as a benefit, as, you know, part of our employment package, right? And that happened when we, I don't know, I think we probably had about 10 people at that point in time working for the company. It was about a third of the ultimate size that the firm grew to. And, you know, it was about the point at which it started to become important to people other than myself. And so I said, you know, yeah, we ought to go out there and we ought to do that. And so we went ahead and we started looking at putting that together. And I get the billing statement the first month from the company that we'd selected, and every single person within our firm was charged a different price.
Yeah.
Every single person. And yet, by law, I could not take a different payroll deduction out of each person's check, because under ERISA, I can't do that.
Right.
So, I cannot charge anyone more than half, or I lose the deductibility as a business. All right, so basically what this meant was that the 18-year-old scrapping young buck who was working in my tech support or customer service area and had an extremely low cost of providing health insurance was essentially putting about $2 an hour into the cost of the 50-year-old woman who was on multiple prescriptions, had a very high monthly cost.
Right.
And when you took that and averaged it out, what that meant is that that guy that was answering those phone calls was getting screwed to the tune of about $2 an hour. And the worst part is I couldn't tell him legally that that was happening. It was a crime for me to disclose this.
All right. The only problem with that, Carl, is now that guy is 60, and when it's time for the people that are 18 to be paying for his, he got laid off, and he's paying $2,000 a month somewhere. So the deal didn't work out so well. I'll tell you, when I was at the same time I was trading on the trading floor, but for me, when I just cleared through First Op, they paid for mine, and thank my clerks for $75 a month, so it was not a big deal. But my friend Audrey, my significant other, is going, how far back we go, for God's sake, which is not a bad thing. One of her friends, we go out to outside Chicago, I'll say, and I'll just say it's the single biggest hospital outside of the Chicago area, or I think it still is. However you think the Chicago area is. And he was the head of procurement. You know, he was the guy who told me about how all the saline solution bags and stuff were all made in Puerto Rico, and you couldn't get them after the hurricane. And all these, I mean,
right,
where they were canceling surgeries. Anyway, this is 1991, 92, right about when Clinton was coming. He goes, I said, how do you charge these people? Because the same question you basically just asked. He says, well, the hospital essentially self-insured or arranged it themselves, Carl. And this is not something you know, but maybe the listeners. He said, if somebody has a Cadillac plan If Carl Denninger walks in with the huge Aetna plan where they pay for everything, we charge him full bore, and when his wife leaves with the baby, we're going to have 15 diapers in there at $8 a throw that you can get for eight cents a throw somewhere else, or 50 cents a throw. We're going to load him up with the care package and the aspirin in case she has problems, and the aspirin's going to be $4 a pill. We're going to load him up with that stuff because we can. And that's like 20% of the people. Now, the next 25% of the people have an insurance company that's come in and has cut a deal, you know, where the baby's going to be $50,000 or $30,000 or whatever the number was in those days. So we can't charge those people anymore. Then there's the Medicare people, which they really come down on us on costs. Then there's the Medicaid people that they pay us $100 a day, whether we don't do anything to them or whether we do brain surgery. Now, I'm sure that's changed since 1990-something. Then there's the people, the 10 or 15% that we don't get anything for, we can't turn away, and we in the emergency room. So the top people kind of cover. So it was this choreography of self-insuring within the hospital. So if you and I went to the emergency room, okay, with a premium plan, we essentially were covering the people in there that had no plan. So I immediately thought, this is not a system that's going to last. If we're going to have people covering people, it should be more, you know, it seemed to me at the time that if you charge the people on the premium side less, they should be paying less, and we'd be better off if everybody just contributed it to buy the people on the bottom the lowest rung insurance and just paid for it for them. Sort of like Nixon. If we'd have sent everybody a check, we wouldn't have any poor people. I mean, there's a simplicity to this. So somehow or another, the Obamacare plan, but at least I recognize the problem. Same thing you did. And today, the problem is still not fixed. I mean, it's not even close to being fixed. We've been jacked around, but the bottom line is every year there's less insurance companies making more money and less hospitals making more money and less people in the pharmacy business making more money. And as long as that happens, you can have any system you want, Carl, and I don't think we're ever coming out on the winning end of this, do you?
Well, no, you're not. But that's the problem that we have right now is that you've got this idea that we can't do anything about that. And oh, by the way, for those who lionize Ronald Reagan, Reagan was the one that signed EMTALA, and he caused this. All right? EMTALA is the law that says that you cannot turn somebody away from the emergency room. That law was passed after a handful of extremely high-profile, very well over-reported and frankly, false reports in the media about people who were having heart attacks or other medical emergencies, and the closest place, for whatever reason, would not take them. And so Reagan passed it. He signed it, went right through Congress, came right to his desk, he signed it, that says that regardless of ability to pay, if you have a medical emergency, they cannot turn you away, and it doesn't matter where it is. So what you now have is hospitals that have staffed up and built up to handle anything because they can do it. And then what did they do? They claimed all sorts of antitrust exemptions. And oh, by the way, they run that argument twice all the way to the Supreme Court, and they lost both times. So, you know, and then you even have your states like California that actually got sued just recently in the last couple of years over this disparate billing practice stuff. And their business and professional regulation code actually cited the Supreme Court ruling out of Arizona that originated in Arizona, that said that these practices are not immune from antitrust prosecutions. And the California state legislature wrote their BPR code to say, oh, by the way, we are doing this to allow disparate billing because the Supreme Court said it's against the law.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, how is it that a state turns around and says, "Oh, by the way, we're doing this because it's illegal"?
Well, we've somehow advanced in this area a little bit on that. Carl, what I'm saying is, we now have these areas that are quote trauma centers that I think you do drive by emergency rooms to get to the right ones. I would say that now, logically for me, because I'm not saying you don't. I kind of like people. If somebody drop somebody who's injured off at an emergency room with a bone sticking out of his leg, I think you should probably, I'll use a MASH term, you should probably triage the guy, get the bone back in, get the antibiotic drip on, put a splint on it. But I don't think you're under any obligation to operate on him and do the best job. I think that's when you send, now that he's stable, I think you send him over to county to get it done. I believe. I mean, it's, that to me makes some sort of sense. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but the thing that gets me is that there's an article here that I have someplace, and it has to do with a bullet victim at County Hospital. And I mean, I know since you had a business, you at least know what cost accounting is and variable costs and those kinds of things versus fixed.
Right.
And I was reading this article about how somebody who enters the emergency room at county within the first half hour is run up a $25,000 bill. And I'm thinking, give me the variable cost there. There's doctors. I know there's people, there's fixed costs. You got doctors on staff on a Saturday night because you're getting a check. How exactly does this shot cause that, this x-ray cause that, when the x-ray machine was bought 20 years ago? I mean, how exactly are you justifying on a variable cost basis that 25 grand in 20 minutes? I mean, what are we doing here? I mean,
Well, they're not. That's the problem, is that there's a thing called a charge master, which is basically a computer file. I mean, you could reduce it down to an Excel file if you wanted to. It is the so-called list price of everything in the hospital. People say that they can't give you a quote on what something's going to cost. Nonsense. They have every single, you know, down to the individual bandage and scalpel is in that thing. And they can give you that price. The thing is that what you have is collusion between insurance companies, hospitals, doctors, and other providers, where they actually have written into their contracts, it says that they cannot disclose to you the prices that are being charged back to these people. It's actually it's a violation of their contract rights.
Wow.
Now, that sort of activity is a per se violation of antitrust law, and yet nobody will do anything about it. So when you see these kinds of numbers thrown around, they're nonsense. I mean, you look at the MRI, for example. When they were first introduced, they were extremely expensive, and as a result, the cost to be scanned was expensive because you had to pay for the machine. But now you can actually get on an airplane, fly to Narita, get the scan done in Japan for what amounts to, in yen, translates about $100. Get back on a plane, fly home for less than it costs you to have that same scan done in the United States.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you remember the case of, and again, I keep throwing this out there because I know nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. When I talk about variable costs and so forth, does anybody even take cost accounting anymore? I don't know. I don't know if they ask Professor Hall if it's even offered, but there was a case that countrywide went. How's that for English? Remember the conjoined twins that were in the Catholic hospital here in Chicago, and because they were conjoined in such a way, I think there was only one heart, one liver, that if you, I'm going to use the term, pull them apart, which is crude, one was going to die, right? I mean, there's no way on earth that they both could have survived. Well, the Catholic hospital wouldn't do it because, look, at the end of the day, one of them's dead, so we're not going to do that. And
right.
And they essentially, you know, and I'm not judging that one way or the other. They ended up going to a place in Pittsburgh. So they airlifted the babies, I guess, right term. I don't know, is that the right term? I guess. And they did this 12-hour operation or 20-hour, whatever the hell it was, Ben Casey deal. And they, sure enough, saved one, and the other one, you know, there wasn't enough parts for two. Okay, so I don't know what else you would have done. I mean, morally or whatever, I don't see what the option was. I honestly don't, but I'm not, you know, the Pope or anything. But the bill was that the family didn't have any insurance or something of that magnitude. The bill was like, this is 20 years ago, Carl, or 15. The bill was like $1.5 million. I want to know what exactly they did. If you had three teams of doctors and you had three sets of nurses, I mean, shifts, and you went in and out every hour, and you had, you know, 30 nurses involved and 10 doctors. What do we charge the entire year of all those people to this one baby? I mean, where did you come up with them? If you've got 30 nurses working on Saturday overtime and they normally make, you know, $40 an hour, let's make it 100. You're not even coming close to $1.5 million in a 20 hour period. I mean, where do you get these numbers? Out of the moon?
Well, yeah, no, they just, Here's one of the fun things that you will find, and I have a couple of bills here that people have sent me that demonstrate this. Let's say you go in and you have you need to have some work done in your knee, okay? So you're going to have surgery done to repair, you know, torn cartilage or something, and they get your knee open, and the surgeon's looking at it and he says, oh, there's a bone spurn here,
And so in addition to fixing the cartilage, since I can see this bone spur, I'm going to remove it. Okay, so he does. You get the bill, and there are two operating theater charges on your bill.
Really?
But you were only in the operating theater once. But their billing system says removing a bone spur requires that I chop your knee open to get to it, right, in order to take it out. Well, fixing a cartilage requires that I chop your knee open or get in there and fix the cartilage. Guess what? You get charged for two OR charges. But you were only in the OR one time.
Yeah. Real quick, it's kind of a sports story. I was I went to a garden party. So I was in a pub, shall we say, up in New Buffalo, Carl, and it's all these people. It was, I think, the Notre Dame had played something. There's a lot of Michigan Notre Dame fans up there, and this large African American guy comes in, and turns out that he had played ball for Michigan, and his brother played for Notre Dame. So I start BSing with the guy. You know me, I talk to everybody. Any good guy, and I would start talking about how much does tell's the name of the guy who did the color. He's not on this year anymore. The guy used to be the halfback anyway at Notre Dame. He's done the color show forever. And I said, how much does whatever his name is make do the? He goes, that's about $85,000 a year. I said, wow, that'd be kind of neat. Doing 12 games a year and them flying you out on a team thing and paying for you to be in Stanford and the places you go and doing the home games. I said, boy, I'd do that in a second. And he's like, well, that's no money. I wouldn't do that. I'm thinking, all right, I'll let that one drop. And then about 10 minutes later, somebody else goes, oh, that's no money. I couldn't do that. And I go, all right, you hit me with the that's no money part about five times. I'm not that much of a dunce. I got to ask, what do you do for a living? Well, I sell what do you call artificial hips and knees? They're not prosthetics. What do they call that stuff? I should know my. What do they call those things? The stuff they. What is your new knee? What is it? It's a new knee. I know, but what's the name for it, Carl? You're better with words than me.
Oh, it's a prosthetic.
Prosthetic. He goes. I sell artificial hips and knees and knuckles and I go. So I gather it's pretty lucrative. I mean, what else am I going to say, Carl? After every number that I talked about, yeah, I'd be a color guy at Notre Dame football for $85,000 a year. I'd do that tomorrow if I was good at it. Wouldn't you? I mean, plus yeah. It'd be fun. Oh, I couldn't do that. It's a waste of my time. And I'm going, what, waste of your time? What are you doing? Well, anyway, the guy says, I sell these things. I go from the hospital. He's a big, good-looking, real nice black dude. Everybody would know him, wouldn't know anything about college football. I don't know if he played pro. I think he did. So, yeah, I'd love to buy my stuff from him, too, but good Lord, Carl. It sounded like the guy's making like $1 million a year or something as a salesman. I mean, how much are they charging for that crap? I mean, it's got to be like a lot of dough, right? I mean, when Audrey's dad got his hip, I asked the doctor, I said, are you guys still paying like that kind of money for these hips and stuff? He goes, no. Yeah, that kind of stopped like 2 years ago. It's way more competitive. He goes, for a while, the numbers were really up there. But I think there are some progress somewhere in some of this stuff. I mean, it's hard to put your finger on it because the bills don't seem to be coming down. But I think within the process, I mean, there are people now that can go out and find an MRI for $600 here, even in Chicago, if you look. If you just get the prescription from your doctor and go to Northwestern, it's still going to be $4,000, I'm guessing. But if you find a place, it's, you know, the phenomenon here, Carl, I don't know if it is there, is if you go to one of these other places, a lot of times your insurance, if you paid for it cash, they won't count that toward your deductible.
Right. But see, here's the thing. Even if people look at this and they say, well, you know, that's a benefit, okay, in that prices are coming down. And I say, okay, first off, if it doesn't count towards your deductible, then there's even more collusion, more antitrust.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Okay, because guess what? That's not how it's supposed to work.
No.
Secondly, it's still five times the cost of the same scan in Japan.
Right. Yeah, but you know, well,
right. So we went from 40 times the cost to five times, and I'm supposed to be cheering.
Well, five times sounds a lot better than 40. You got to admit.
Well, it does, but the fact remains, I'm still getting screwed.
Right. All right, Kyle. Thank you very much for spectacular stuff today. Next time, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this medical stuff because I don't see how if we don't get this corralled, I think it's the absolute bane of middle America. If you're making $55,000 a year and you're paying your own insurance, you are in a depression. You're not buying blue jeans made in America. You're buying them made in God knows where. As long as they're $20, it's all kind of ties together. I think, Carl. I mean, I really do.
Yep, it does.
SP Futures up 375. Dow Futures up 20. NASDAQ Futures up 14. Carl, thanks again. Jay-Z, good job. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer? I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.